Donald Trump's relationship with his supporters is going to change, at least for the time being. The president has the coronavirus, and setting aside for now the possibility that he gets really sick, he is at least going to be confined to the White House for a while and unable to get that psychic boost campaign rallies seem to give him. With Mr. Trump trailing in the polls, he could also use the electoral boost from these gatherings with rank-and-file Americans. And a significant number of those are people who go to church on Sunday. In a new article for The Atlantic, the reporter McKay Coppins says, Trump takes people of faith seriously. He knows they're an important part of his base. But in interviews with former aides and people once close to the president, he found Trump says one thing about religion in public and something different in private. Coppins has been thinking about this story for a while now, and it all began with a conversation he had with Trump when he was thinking about running for president.
I, in 2014, took a trip with Donald Trump to Mar-a-Lago while I was profiling him, and he invited me into this kind of cavernous, ornately decorated chamber. It's exactly as you would imagine it. Gold everywhere and very Baroque furniture, walnut paneled walls, and there was a giant portrait of Trump in a golf sweater hanging above us. During the course of the conversation, he started to strenuously make the case that Mitt Romney had lost his 2012 presidential bid because of his faith. And Trump started to go on at great length and with great energy about how Americans just thought his faith was totally exotic and strange and they didn't get it. And maybe it was like a sense of Mormon politeness, but I felt like I could tell where he might be going, and I felt like I needed to interrupt before he got there and sort of inform him that I was also a Mormon. And so I did. I cut him off and I said, you know, I'm Mormon too. And he raised his eyebrows and said, you are? And then immediately, within a second, changed his whole approach and started talking about how great Mormons are and I love the Mormons and other people don't get it, but I do. And then he kind of changed the subject and moved on. It was really classic Trumpian schmoozing in some way. As soon as he found out that I was a Latter-day Saint, he immediately just started talking about how great the Latter-day Saints were and how great the Mormons were, and he loves the Mormons. But what it kind of hinted at, and you know, this later was borne out by my reporting, was that he was very comfortable saying one thing to religious people's face and saying entirely different things in private.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about President Trump's relationship with religious leaders and members of their flocks. Latter-day Saints may be a critical block of voters for the president if he can get them. We'll begin with McKay Coppins, who says he actually regrets revealing his Mormonism to Donald Trump when they were at Mar-a-Lago those years ago. But he also wondered, if he hadn't interrupted him, what more would Trump have told him about Mormons?
I remember in 2016, when it began to become a storyline in the national media that Latter-day Saints weren't quite as energized about supporting Trump as they had been past Republican presidential candidates. I always wondered what he was saying in private about Mormons, because this is a guy who he spends a lot of time watching cable news. And when Fox News and CNN started to talk about, you know, is Utah going to be in play? Are Mormons going to turn out for Trump? That was clearly something that he was aware of and was concerned about. His campaign started to really devote resources toward the end of the election to win over those voters. And so I always kind of wondered what he was saying in private. And then as he became president, as the years progressed, I started to wonder, you know, what is this guy saying in general about the various people of faith in his coalition who, you know, publicly he champions so loudly? Because I think most people who are sort of objective observers would not say that Donald Trump is himself a person of deep faith. I don't think that even he would say that he is, you know, this a model religious person. Mm-hmm. But I do think that a lot of people in his base believes that he holds their faith in high esteem. And in fact, that is kind of the central argument that Trump has made repeatedly to conservative Christians and religious conservatives in general, is that, you know, Democrats don't take you seriously. They hold you in disdain, but I take you seriously. I'm your champion. That's kind of the message that Trump continually delivers to conservative religious people. And so I always wondered, you know, when the cameras aren't on, when he's not in front of a crowd, when he's kind of talking in unguarded ways to his friends or, you know, aides or confidants, is he sounding the same message? Is he using the same tone? And so that's kind of what the jumping off point for this whole piece.
The piece begins with a story from 2015. And Donald Trump calls into his office Michael Cohen, his former lawyer, his fixer, I guess, is the way to describe him. And Trump wants Cohen to see this article. Tell that story.
Yeah, so he has a printout of an article about a megachurch pastor in Atlanta named Creflo Dollar, who is trying to raise $60 million from his congregation to buy a private jet. And Trump actually knew Creflo Dollar a few years earlier when he first began floating the idea that he might run for president as a Republican. He had met with a group of evangelicals in Trump Tower, and Creflo Dollar was among them. And in that meeting, Trump had kind of, you know, reverently bowed his head while various pastors took turns laying hands on him in prayer. Creflo Dollar was among them. And now a few years later, he had called Michael Cohen in because he saw this article. And according to Cohen, he was like delighted by it, by the idea that this pastor was trying to buy a Gulfstream G650. Cohen told me that he thought it was a scam. He thought it was hilarious and was eager to highlight that the pastor was full of expletive, a word that we can't say on the radio.
Yeah.
And then Trump said something interesting in the midst of this rant. He said, oh, they're all hustlers, which I think kind of illuminates how he sees a lot of the conservative evangelical leaders who surround him. You know, he clearly, at least according to Cohen and other people I've talked to, sees them as people who are not quite on the level. Hmm. And almost in some way, you know, seems to respect that or admire that or feel a kinship with it.
Here's the main contention in the article as you write it. And let me read from it. You write, in private, many of Trump's comments about religion are marked by cynicism and contempt. That's according to the people who have worked for him. We'll get to the details here in a second, but just first explain your sources. Who is it that told you the president holds religious people in contempt?
This is a range of people who have worked with him over the years as aides, either since he entered politics or even before, like in the case of Michael Cohen. And, you know, then there are other people who have worked with him on his campaigns. I also, you know, interviewed his niece, Mary Trump. I interviewed a former Trump Organization executive named Barbara Rez. Some of them are on the record. Some are on background. Hmm. But the thing that I do want to note up front is that I spoke with a spokesperson for the White House before this story was published and went through all the details and anecdotes in the story. And when I asked for comment, they actually did not dispute any of the details in the story. Instead, the White House spokesman said that the president is known for joking and his terrific sense of humor, which he shares with all people of faith. The implication there is that whatever comments I'm reporting on here were just jokes or you know, harmless in some way. But they didn't deny anything in the story.
There are a couple of moments that I think people are maybe familiar with in terms of Donald Trump and his relationship with religion. There's the moment when the Black Lives Matter protests were sort of raging throughout the country and the president walks from the White House to St. John's Church and he's photographed holding up a Bible. And you get this reaction that he's just like – he's not entirely comfortable holding a Bible or being with a Bible. There's that quote I'm sure you've heard and others where he's asked by, I think it's an evangelical pastor, you know, what's your favorite passage in the Bible? And he's just kind of mystified. He doesn't really have one.
Yeah.
And it seems obvious he just doesn't know anything about the Bible, doesn't know the New Testament from the Old Testament. So I'm wondering, McKay, what do you think you understand about Donald Trump and his actual religious background? Did his parents go to church? Did he ever have to sit in a pew when he was a kid or go to Sunday school? What do we know about that?
Yeah, his mother was a fairly devout Catholic, by all accounts. He himself says that he's Presbyterian. As a child growing up, or around the mid-century, as he did, it's very likely that he went to church at least sometimes. But when I talked to Mary Trump, his niece, she said that their family just was not very religious in general. The subject almost never came up around the dinner table. There was not a lot of discussion of religion or faith. To the extent that he has any kind of religious worldview in his adult life that's been documented, he and I believe his father as well were kind of adherents to Norman Vincent Peale, who was you could call him a preacher. Some people would say more of a motivational speaker, but he had this idea of extreme positivity basically that if you believed that you were going to be successful, you would be successful, that you shouldn't waste a lot of time thinking about mistakes you've made or dwell on the past, that you should just always move forward. It was kind of a philosophy that appealed to Donald Trump. And in a lot of ways, I think he has built his life around it. I'm not sure if Norman Vincent Peale was the one who instilled these ideas in him, but certainly they seem to have resonated with him. But, beyond that, yeah, you're right. He's not a person who is familiar with the Bible. He's not a person who prays. He has said on the record that he's never asked God for forgiveness, which is kind of a key tenet of Christianity. When he talks about religion, it's generally more about kind of cultural signifiers, political signifiers, identity, and less about actual kind of theology or faith.
It's interesting that you write about that he feels a kind of kinship with, in particular, the prosperity preachers. And it's interesting because you mentioned in your piece that he's seen videos of televangelists, like appealing to congregants to send in money, doing faith healings. He sees their mega churches. Now, he sees it, you say, at least those close to him say, he sees it as a racket. But not necessarily in a bad way. He's like, this seems like a good way to make some money. That's appealing to him in some ways. It's a racket in that they found a way to make some money.
Right. He respects the money making aspect of it. I spoke to one former political advisor to Trump who told me that he was very familiar with the business dealings of prosperity preachers and prosperity gospel churches. In one case, this advisor recalled Trump expressed awe at Joel Osteen's media empire, and especially the viewership that his televised sermons command, and was kind of just very impressed by it, right? According to people who are close to him, he didn't really take seriously the religious aspect of it at all. In fact, Michael Cohen recounts in his book coming back from a meeting with evangelical ministers and pastors who laid hands on him and said, can you believe that BS? Can you believe they believe that BS? Just kind of completely shrugging it off. But on some level, almost, kind of like game recognizes game, like Trump kind of, he appreciated the hustle. He thought that their ability to make money, to build their kind of own small empires was impressive to him. And in some ways, kind of he saw himself in them.
You described something one of his former campaign advisors told you, that Trump said he believed he'd get support from the Christian leaders because, as he put it, and back to that idea of a game, he said he played the game. So what is the game, as he thinks about?
He views religion, especially this brand of conservative religious politics, right? He views this as completely transactional. When he was preparing for the 2016 primaries, when he was kind of talking to his political advisors, they were running through the people who he would be up against, people like Mike Huckabee and Ted Cruz, who just have much deeper roots in the religious right. And, you know, Trump was told that one hurdle he'd have to get over is the fact that he is seen as completely secular, not religious at all. And he kind of shrugged that off. His view was, as one former campaign advisor put it, I've been talking to these people for years. I've let them stay at my hotels. They're going to endorse me. You know, he sort of felt like his stature and celebrity and wealth would be enough to win over some of these people. And to be fair, he was right. I mean, from the very beginning of his campaign, or at least very early on, he had some high-profile, visible evangelical surrogates come out to support him.
That's McKay Coppins. His article in The Atlantic is called Trump Secretly Mocks His Christian Supporters. You can find a link to it on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
When it comes to elections, the presidential election tends to take the spotlight, and that's especially true this year. But state politics have a big impact, too. I'm Sonia Hudson, politics reporter at KUER. My job is to keep you up to date with the candidates seeking your vote in the elections unique to Utah, like the races for governor and representation in Congress. Get a fuller picture of what's on your ballot by listening to Morning Edition and All Things Considered here at 90.1 and online at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about Donald Trump's relationship with religious leaders and members of their flocks. They're a core part of his constituency, one he's not going to be able to rally in the same way now that he's tested positive for the coronavirus. But in a new article for The Atlantic, McKay Coppins found that while Trump needs believers, in private, he talks behind their backs. You know, the question that has baffled people really since Trump emerged on the scene is how it is that people with very conservative, orthodox beliefs about morality, you know, could support someone with such a kind of questionable background and such a brash, you know, demeanor. And it seems as though the answer comes in this quote you include in your reporting on this. This is from a megachurch pastor named Robert Jeffress, who said this: I am not voting for Trump to be the teacher in my third grader Sunday school class. It's not what he's running for. What does that mean? That they also see it as transactional? That I don't need him to be moral. I just need him to be there so we can get the things through that we need done.
That's right. And I think that this gets at an important kind of gulf between the conservative Christian elites who Trump has spent time courting and his conservative Christian fans and supporters, you know, at large. So, you know, I write about this one meeting that Trump had with about a dozen kind of influential figures on the religious right. And Robert Jeffress was one of them. The talk radio host Eric Metaxas was one of them, a theologian named Wayne Grudem. These are kind of people with a lot of stature on the religious right. And in that meeting, so I got this recording of the meeting, and it's really interesting because throughout the meeting, Trump makes almost no attempt to kind of signal or suggest that he himself is a pious, devout man. He says at one point, I don't know the Bible as well as some other people. He talks about the first time he met Mike Pence. He said that Pence, you know, is who would become his vice president, asked him to bow his head and pray. And Trump said, excuse me? Because he thought it was so strange and it kind of took him aback. And at one point in the meeting, he interrupted a discussion about religious freedom, which is, of course, you know, a top issue for a lot of conservative Christians, to complain about a Republican senator, Ben Sasse, who had been critical of him, and kind of brag about the taunting nickname he'd made up for him. He said, oh, I call him Little Ben Sasse. I have to do it. I'm sorry. That's where my religion always deserts me. It, almost like as a joke, right? So what I thought was striking listening to the recording of this meeting is that the people in that room were very clear-eyed about the fact that they were not dealing with a very religious man, right? Yeah. But those people, many of whom went on to very kind of full-throatedly endorse him and support his candidacy, have not been as upfront about that fact with their fans, whether those are people in their churches or who listen to their talk radio shows or read their books or whatever, I think it's important to tease this out, because while I do think that a lot of the conservative Christian leaders who have allied themselves with Trump kind of understand that this is a transactional situation, mm-hmm. and Trump sees it as that way as well, I'm not sure that all of his supporters do. Certainly some of his supporters understand that, but it's not clear, at least according to the polling, that his supporters realize just how kind of cynical and transactional this relationship is.
That's so interesting that you're making that distinction between, as you say, the sort of the leaders, the Christian elites in the rank and file. Does Donald Trump understand rank and file believers? I mean, if there's not a transaction going on, does he understand how rank and file Christians are thinking? If they see him as moral, as you mentioned, some believe that he's accepted Jesus Christ as his savior, those kinds of things. But what does he understand about what they believe? Because this was interesting in the article. You say that he thinks Christians are impressed and taken by his wealth and celebrity, not a sense of morality, it seems.
This is interesting, right? Because I do think that Donald Trump understands on some level that that a lot of his Christian supporters do not see him as a moral exemplar, right? They do not, they're not turning to him or supporting him because of his character. And the way that he's presented himself and pitched himself throughout his kind of brief political career is almost a bodyguard to the religious right, right? Like, I'm going to get into office and use my power to protect you and to get you the conservative judges that you want and to enact laws and policies that will protect your conservative congregations and various conservative religious institutions. And that's what I'm there for. And so on some level, I think that he does think that they see this as a completely transactional situation as well. And I think that actually some of his supporters do agree with him, right?
Yeah.
But I also think that he thinks that he needs to at least play the game, you know, to come back to that phrase, right? He needs to at least hold up the Bible every once in a while and insert references to God in prayer in his speeches. And it's almost like everybody is kind of going along with the same kabuki theater, right? Where like a lot of his supporters know that he doesn't really read the Bible and he knows that they know it, but they're all just going to kind of pretend together and that'll be enough, right? I think that on some level, that's how Trump thinks about it, at least. I'm not sure that that's, again, how all of his supporters think about it, but it seems to be how he views his relationship with the religious right.
You mentioned how former aides said the president ridicules not just people themselves, doesn't just see them as, in some cases, hustlers, doesn't just see their faith as a kind of racket or BS, but that he also ridicules their rites and doctrines. Can you say a little bit more about that?
The couple of examples that I pulled out are, one, the idea of laying on of hands, you know, a strong tradition in many Christian denominations. He thinks that's just completely silly. And in fact, this didn't make it into the piece, but I was told by more than one person who have worked for him that he actually actively is uncomfortable with it, in part because he's a well-known germaphobe. Mm-hmm. So when he gets with a group of pastors and they lay hands on him, he kind of tenses up because he's got all the, you know, it's all the germs, right? That is, he's worried about that. And Michael Cohen actually told me that after one of those meetings, he immediately went back and got out the hand sanitizer wipes and wiped himself down. So he's made fun of that. The idea of faith healings in general, he thinks that he called that a racket. Then back to the Latter-day Saint issue, he, you know, actively makes fun of the religious undergarments worn by many Mormons. And to him, that, you know, not only does he not understand, it seems, the religious significance of them, he thinks that it's actively, you know, a hilarious thing to make jokes about, specifically about Mitt Romney, a politician that he personally dislikes very intensely.
Let me ask you more about where members and leaders of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints fit in this story. Because you say in the article, one religious group the Trump campaign has been fixated on this year is Mormons. Why is that?
Well, in 2016, Latter-day Saints rejected the Trump candidacy in fairly unprecedented numbers. Depending on which statistics you're looking at, he ended up winning somewhere between 50 and 60% of Mormon voters, which is a majority, but it's significantly down from past Republican presidential candidates who typically enjoy closer to 80% Mormon support. So he realized, I think, a little late in the 2016 election that this was going to be a problem for him. In 2020, his campaign is taking it much more seriously, not because he's worried about losing Utah. I think most polls suggest that he's going to win there, but more he's worried about Mormon voters in states like Arizona and Nevada, which are battleground states. And Arizona in particular, he won that by a pretty small margin in 2016. By all accounts, 2020, it's an even closer race. A lot of polls have him behind Biden there. And there are enough Latter-day Saint voters there to make a difference if they don't turn out for him or if they vote for somebody else. So the campaign is taking it seriously, and they've designated Donald Trump Jr., the president's son, who's kind of an avid hunter and outdoorsman, to be the envoy to Mormon voters. And he's spent the past couple of years cultivating relationships with high-profile conservatives in the faith. Earlier this year, he did a call with reporters where he invoked Mormon pioneers to describe Donald Trump's innovative spirit. He clearly is making the rounds. One interesting detail I did hear, though, in my reporting was that apparently Don Jr. has been so effective in courting Latter-day Saints that some influential Republicans in Utah have been left with the impression that he may be interested in converting to Mormonism. I did ask Don Jr.'s spokesman for this, one of the stranger comment requests I've ever had to make in my career. he did not respond, though. So,
yeah.
But I do think it speaks to how much the Trump campaign is focusing on this.
Well, isn't there some question about whether or not he's read the Book of Mormon, or at least parts of the Book of Mormon? That was interesting.
Yeah, so according to two senior Utah Republicans I spoke to with knowledge of this, said that Don Jr. has taken kind of an active interest in church history and has read portions of the Book of Mormon, or at least claimed to have, or possibly read it with somebody who opened it up for him. But I think two things are going on here. One is probably Don Jr., like his father, is very savvy about telling their religious supporters what they want to hear, right? Yeah. The other thing is, I think, and I say this as a Latter-day Saint, and I say this affectionately, we often are very quick to assume interest in people who ask about our faith.
It's the missionary in you, right? Well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. McKay, I wonder, as far as you can tell, does President Trump think of LDS leaders in the same way he does evangelical leaders or megachurch pastors?
It's a good question. I don't have any reporting on that. I did ask around. You know, Donald Trump met with leaders of the church a couple years ago when he came out to Utah. And that, you know, this is a tradition. Leaders of the church have met with many presidents of both parties. And they took him to Welfare Square and kind of showed off the church's welfare program. I did not hear anything about what he thought of them. My guess, though, is that I don't know if he sees them in quite the same category, in part because, much to, you know, probably his frustration, the church leaders are not getting involved in partisan politics, right? They're not like a Robert Jeffress who commands the Dallas megachurch, where he's on Fox News all the time talking about how great the Trump administration is. That, you know, you don't see President Russell M. Nelson doing anything like that. And so I'm not sure that Trump, has given the same kind of amount of thought to them as he has the much more politically engaged evangelical leaders.
How about how rank and file Mormons see Donald Trump? Where, and I guess it goes to this. This is the thing that I wondered. As far as you can tell, where do they seem to come down, if you could venture a guess? More along the lines of seeing Trump as flawed, but, you know, a good enough tool to get them conservative policies and judges? Or do the rank and file of, you know, Mormons see him, as some rank and file evangelicals do, as a legitimately moral person?
Yeah, so I would be interested in seeing polling on this. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find any good polling, but my sense from talking to quite a few Mormon voters is that those who support him are more clear-eyed about the president's character and lack of religiosity than maybe his supporters in some other faiths. I think that in general, the Mormon kind of ambivalence about Donald Trump inflects even those who are in his base. There certainly are a few, and I talked to a few who you know are convinced that he's a man of God and that he's being used as a tool in God's hands to enact various conservative policies. But I think a lot of them, at least a lot of the people I've talked to who are supporting Trump, see him as basically, you know, the lesser of two evils, or somebody who will enact an agenda that they support, even if they don't like him as a person and don't think that he's a great moral exemplar.
Let me ask you finally, what kind of reaction are you getting to the piece? And I'm wondering how you're thinking about the potential fallout for these kinds of accusations, because they seem, at least I thought, that they seemed on par with the story from your colleague at The Atlantic, Jeffrey Goldberg, who wrote about how Trump had, you know, referred to military service members and wounded veterans as suckers and losers. Do you think this story where he's talking about religious leaders as hustlers and it being a racket, do you think it will have the same kind of impact in some way?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, I mean, the story got a lot of attention and has generated a lot of conversation. There have been a lot of readers, I can tell you from looking at our metrics in The Atlantic. The question of will it matter, how many people will it influence, I just don't know, right? I mean, this is one of probably the most common question I've gotten since the story has been published. And, you know, as a journalist, I try not to really think that much about that question. I think that it's important to document what's happening and the truth of what the president says in private about, you know, his own supporters, whether or not it's going to sway them or whether or not they'll believe it. What I have seen, though, and I think this is interesting and worth teasing out a little, is one of the quick kind of reflexive reactions I've seen from some of Trump's kind of religious apologists is the rush to say, oh, well, we all know he's not religious. Come on, this isn't news. Like, give me a break. You think we're stupid. And I don't, right? I want to, like, emphasize that, first of all, I'm a person of faith, so I'm not trying to deride anybody's faith. And I understand that a lot of people know that he's not religious, but I do think that there's a difference between the president not being personally devout and him expressing kind of disdain and contempt for people of faith, including those who are in his base. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever people decide to do, I hope that this story will kind of make it possible that Trump's religious supporters are open-eyed about how he feels about a lot of about them and a lot of their faith. And then they can make their decision about who they're going to vote for, what they're going to do, however they want. But I do think this information should be out there and people will consider it.
McKay Coppins, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
McKay Coppins, you can find a link to his article in The Atlantic on our website, radiowest.org. When we come back, we'll talk more about Donald Trump's relationship with Mormon voters, which he's going to need, particularly in Arizona. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Hi, I'm Ross Terrell, news editor here at KUER. When I joined the station in March, I didn't expect to be greeted by an earthquake and hadn't experienced a windstorm. Whether you're kind of new to Utah like me or you've lived here for decades, you know that you can turn to us for reliable, accurate information. Now, with state and national elections around the corner, KUER and NPR are even more important. You can support the station right now at KUER.org/donate.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we've been discussing an article in the latest issue of The Atlantic. McKay Coppins has been reporting how while Donald Trump speaks one way about his religious supporters in public, in private he has disdain for their rituals and their beliefs. Joining us now on the program is David Magleby. He's a professor emeritus of political science at Brigham Young University, longtime political observer. David Magleby, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you, Doug.
We have to begin with the obvious, which may or may not have anything to do with Donald Trump's relationship with religious voters, but the fact that Mr. Trump has tested positive for the coronavirus. I just wanted to get your sense as a political observer now for many decades. Just for a moment, work me through how you're thinking about the factors that are now in play.
Well, I think it's a stunner because anytime the president of the United States falls ill, it raises all kinds of concerns for everybody about chain of command and capacity to lead. This is the most important leader in the world. And so we'll all be paying close attention to just how severe the symptoms are. He's at risk for more reasons than having the virus. He's in an age bracket, and the obesity all add to a serious concern about his well-being.
So let's talk about this article. It's hard to say what kind of traction that McKay Coppins could get with the piece, especially in light of the news today. But there's always that question of will these kinds of revelations matter to voters? Now, McKay Coppins wouldn't really weigh in on that. He just said, I'm just going to present this. But this seems like something you could talk about. What do things like this stick? And at what point do they stick?
Well, they stick with some voters. They don't stick with everyone. And so we have really solid evidence of this from 2016. From the Utah College's exit poll of Utah voters. And you'll remember that about 20% of Utah voters voted for Evan McMullen. These were people who tended to be very active Mormons and Republicans. And I think it was very clear that they didn't want to vote for Hillary Clinton, but they equally clearly did not want to vote for Donald Trump. And that 20% meant that Donald Trump did not get a majority of the Utah vote. He got a plurality at 45.5%. And that's been a burr under his saddle ever since. And so I do think these things matter with a segment of voters. There's a set of Republicans and Mormons, and they tend to be very much similar in Utah in terms of characteristics. There's a lot of overlap. But there's a tendency for them to actually make party more important than candidate character. And so for them, it's more about policy, and it's especially been about the court. And so to that extent, I think things haven't changed with that 45% of Utah voters who voted for Trump 4 years ago.
There's no Evan McMullen here now.
That's the very interesting dynamic. Yeah. What will they do? We know that Mitt Romney voted for Ann Romney.
Right.
Will some of those active Mormon, strong Republicans who just can't stomach voting for Trump skip? Will they write in their spouse? We don't know. I mean, Doug, I have to say that I think McKay Coppins' story, following upon the story about his taxes, that is to say Trump's taxes, mm-hmm. raises the elevation of the profile of Trump negativity even higher. So in political science and social psychology, we talk about dissonance and how do you deal with information that runs counter to your priors.
Yeah.
In this case, we have those two big stories, his hostility to Mormons and especially making fun of Mormon undergarments, and his not having paid taxes in so many of these recent years, and only $750 each year in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
A lot of Mormons pay a lot more than that in taxes. It's got to rankle them. But what will they do? We know that in 2016, Access Hollywood, the tape where he bragged about groping women, did not move voters further towards Evan McMullen. So you don't know what the threshold is of negative Trump stories before people say, I just can't do it.
There's an article that just came out in the New York Times today about how President Trump may have a problem with Mormons in the Southwest, particularly Mormon women in Arizona. And the article mentions how the LDS Church has about 430,000 members in Arizona, about 184,000 in Nevada. And I wondered about – now, Arizona – talk me through this if you would. Arizona is crucial for Donald Trump. And so if you have Mormon women who are not going to show up for the president, that could be really important.
Oh, it will be important. And there is increasing national attention to the Arizona vote and to the Nevada vote. Nevada's not quite as close.
Yeah.
But both of them have substantial numbers of Mormons. And both of them have had a tradition of Mormons in politics in their state that were highly regarded, one in each party. Harry Reid in Nevada and Jeff Flake, a Republican in Arizona. And I would think that Jeff Flake's story is an element of understanding what may well happen with Arizona Republicans. He's a dyed-in-the-wool conservative.
Yeah.
He's no liberal, but he simply can't tolerate the kinds of stories we're talking about today with Trump. Not the personal stuff about religion, but the taxes and the hostility and, frankly, the bullying that we saw in the debate earlier this week. And all of those things, I think, will be elements of the female vote and to some extent the male vote in Arizona. I don't think the debate performance this week helped Donald Trump with Mormons in Arizona. Hmm.
The Times cited this public opinion survey from a group called the Voter Study Group. Now, this was a small group of respondents. We have to sort of mention that as a disclaimer, but the results are worth at least, I think, asking about because it showed that just 42% of Mormon women plan to vote for Mr. Trump this year, while 75% of Mormon men said they were voting for Mr. Trump. What do you make of that? Is that that can't surprise you? I guess
doesn't surprise me. And I would say first that the Democracy Fund Voter Study Group that you mentioned is a respected survey operation. I'm using some of their data in a project I'm working on right now. There are many prominent political scientists that are part of that ongoing large data collection project. So I put credence in the numbers. And I think it speaks to this tension within Mormon voters, and for that matter, all voters, I think, about do I follow the policy and not worry so much about the personal character, or do I worry more about the personal character? And especially with regards to how he sees and treats women. And the track record is very clear on Trump. We knew this from the 2016 election and before the Access Hollywood tape. But just look at the disparaging things that he said about women in public office in our country and around the world. One of our most important allies in the world is Germany. And Angela Merkel has been a superb leader of Germany, a strong ally of the United States. The kinds of disparaging comments he's made about her and he made about Theresa May, another prominent allied female leader, shows, I think, to women that he has a problem with women. And that is part of what I think you're seeing in that Arizona Republican female difference between men and women. We found similar kinds of differences in the 2016 Utah College's exit poll in that McMullen support. I think Mormon women are far more repulsed by Trump than Mormon men.
This is interesting, too, because you hear a lot of conversations about the distinctions between younger Latter-day Saints, particularly millennial Mormons, and how they may behave differently than their parents or older Latter-day Saints. When you zoom in on age, this was in the New York Times article, younger Latter-day Saints seem even less inclined to support Trump. There's an economics professor at BYU, Jacob Rue, they referred to in the piece, who surveyed about 400 of his former students last May. And he found, according to the article, that for women between 18 and 29 years of age, 60% were going to vote for Joe Biden. And in that age group, only 40% of men were. Again, there's that distinction between men and women, but 60% were going to vote for Joe Biden. What do you make of the age distinction here? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think there's a set of other issues that are impacting young people. It is also the treatment of immigrants. I think it's the Dreamers kind of issue. Hmm. I mean, there's a whole mosaic here that all fits together in terms of impressions for young people about Trump. I'm not surprised that the division is much closer than it would have been 20 years ago. And I think it speaks to the potential damage that a Donald Trump is doing to the Republican brand among younger Mormons. And it's not just younger Mormons. Doug Flake is still a Republican, but he recognized that within the Republican Party in Arizona today, the Trump people have taken over. The interesting question will be, what does this mean for the Republican Party if Trump loses? Will some of these younger people and women in Arizona who would traditionally have voted Republican come back to the party, or will the party become the party of Donald Trump Jr.?
Joe Biden is a devout Catholic, man who goes to church, talks about his faith. But he's also a Democrat. So how do let's talk in particular about Utah voters. We've been talking about Arizona voters, but just Mormon voters in general, but key in on Utah voters now. Could they cross over because they see Joe Biden as more appealing in terms of just his sort of moral view?
That's a really good question. We didn't have a test for that in 2016 because Hillary Clinton was very negatively viewed by Mormons. And that was in part due to how her past record had been perceived, but it was also a very skillful campaign on the part of the Trump campaign and the Republican Party to label her in highly negative terms. Having said that, Doug, it's important for you to know that Mormons in Utah saw Hillary Clinton as more moral than they saw Donald Trump. Mormons in Utah who were Republicans saw Clinton as more moral, but they still voted for Trump. So I think it says that to some extent, the personal character of the candidate is not as important as the party label. Partisanship is a very, very powerful element of our politics. It's become more powerful, and it will be important in 2020. Having said that, I think your point is well taken, that there are elements of the Biden story that will resonate with Mormons who pay attention and don't tune out his party label. And it surfaced in recent stories. Part of it is how he defended his son, Hunter Biden, in the debate, when he talked about his drug problem and how he's confronted it. I think many voters, and there's polling data that's come out this week to show it, that said that that story may well have helped Biden with religious voters because of the compassion element. It's a rare family that doesn't have someone who's had a drug abuse problem. And when families have to deal with that, it's challenging, it's embarrassing, it's difficult. And how he handled that in the debate may well help him with Mormons. And moreover, how he's handled the death of his daughter and his wife in an automobile accident, and the death of his son, Beau, to cancer, speaks to a kind of depth of empathy and compassion that is completely absent from Donald Trump. And that won't be lost on Mormons. We go to a lot of funerals. It's a big part of the Mormon culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we grieve with each other, and we know what real grief looks like. And Joe Biden has experienced real grief, and nobody who watches him or listens to him will miss that story.
If you go by McKay Coppin's article, we know what Donald Trump thinks about religious leaders, but what do you think he understands about mainstream believers? Because Coppin says in the piece that Donald Trump thinks that Christians are impressed and taken by his wealth and celebrity. But I guess the thing that I wondered about is that if Trump wanted to appeal to Christians, and if he thought he understood the way they thought, he wouldn't lead out with the celebrity part. He'd lead out with humility and morality and restraint. So what do you think all of this says about Trump's idea about how Christians think?
Well, I think he's disparaging of it. It's very foreign to him, and therefore he ridicules it. And that's what he does with anything that is foreign to him or that isn't part of his life story. That's true with the people who served in the military, as he's ridiculed them, as you mentioned, with the Goldberg piece. And for me, the most offensive part of it is the ridicule of Mormon religious underclothing. Anybody who knows a devout Jew or Muslim or many other faiths wouldn't make fun of a rosary that a Catholic might have. You respect other people's religious traditions. And so to fixate, as McKay Coplin's piece says, on Mormon undergarments, the way he apparently does and has, suggests a disdain for people having faith. And I think it's because he doesn't have faith himself.
It's David McElwee. He's a professor emeritus of political science at Brigham Young University. Professor, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Doug.
Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter at Radio West. Our intern is Ivana Martinez, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Christy Miners is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.